That's the Zoom. And then I have this other safety device that I have. You know how the technology gods need a lot of attention these days.
Yes.
So, welcome to Jhana Long here today, May the 12th, for an interview for the upcoming book originally titled Yoga Radicals: Inspiring Stories from Pioneers in the Field. So, welcome, Jhana. Let's just get into a little centering. And as we do that, I'm just going to walk us through this five-pointed star prototyping model so we can have it imprinted in our space. And in the ways that you know how, and all of the ways that came to you from before and that are coming to all of us from beyond now, this emerging future that we're landing in. Just let your body settle, giving it time and space to gently listen to the moves of these sensing organs that we have in our bodies, these ways of knowing that we have in our hearts. Sensing and feeling this connection to the big body earth, each of us on our own spot, big body earth, our mother. And then allowing whatever else that you'd like to welcome by way of guides and angels, others that might help this field of attention that we're activating through our practices, through these times of letting go and letting come something perhaps new. And so, this quality of engaging and visualizing this crystallizing vision and intention, something that comes in and then goes out into the world, listening to the universe as a helpful place. And then remembering that as these intelligences of head and heart and embodied will, we're calling it this presence, that something begins to expand and others, a core team perhaps, come into your purview, to your view. And then these places and spaces began to also arise, the where we engage in these new practices, in this moving from a me to we place. And then these very human experiences of learning by doing, doing one thing, letting it go, iterating it, fine-tuning, tinkering it, and this massaging of the being while we do. And so that's just another way of listening in while we also ground in this work of the Presencing Institute and these models of societal transformation that occur even as we each go through our own personal transformation. And so let's just land in that vertical awareness of your spine, right? That space of the instrument that you know so well. Another singer of the joys of being alive. I just look at you and know that in my heart. And then to expand together out into the field, this horizontal ecosystem that's inviting us in this time of great pause. With all the alarms and whistles of our time that come in to remind us how we might catch the future and bring it right into this moment. And so letting go of anything that didn't land in you and just opening up now, Jhana, with your own words, just for our listeners, so that you might come from your place of connection as we start.
Well, Ali, I'm happy to be here and participate. I didn't know I was a radical. But then again, maybe I am and have always been that, just never wrapped myself in that adjective. So that alone gives me something to contemplate as I, you know, continue in this space of stillness and opportunity for deeper self-awareness. And I'm very grateful for that.
Thank you. So let's dive into the questions then. And this first question relates to this quality of initiation, or more sometimes I like to invite it as an invocation, the call, you might remember, that as you were practicing as a personal willing person, I'm interested if you could call up and embody as you remember through your language, so that we can have a story that unfolds from your embodied memory. Tell us, please, Jhana, how your inspiration arose. Can you put some language on what you were thinking, what you were feeling, what you were sensing, and where it might have come from? What's the origin?
The initial spark is what you're referring to.
That's right.
Well, you know, Allie, I think I've always been some sort of a seeker, even as a child. My earliest experience, and what I look back now and say was witnessing spirit in action, was in the deep woods of the rural South, down in Florida, Opa-locka, Florida, as a child. I lived with my grandmother, and we were in Florida living with her brother, who was married to what we would call Pentecostal now, my Aunt Sarah, my uncle's wife. She was a fire and brimstone minister. And, you know, she was a fiery preacher. And we went to her church. Now, they called it at that time the Sanctified Church. And it was the type of church that, you know, the sermon, the music, the singing would work people into this fever pitch where, you know, they appeared to become possessed. They said they got the Holy Ghost. That's what they called it. And here I am, a 3-year-old in this experience. And, you know, people, when we're in church, people around me speaking in tongues and falling out and all of that. But the interesting thing was, as a child, I felt that. I could feel that thing, whatever it was that moved them to get up and dance in ways that you could not consciously dance. You just totally let yourself, you released yourself to this feeling. And I remember that and would do my little dancing and all as a child. And I wasn't a very shy child. I remember once walking up the aisle of the church and just belting out this song, "Yes, Jesus Loves Me." I'm 3 years old, but I could feel something moving in that experience of being in that church. And from time to time, I didn't live in in Florida at the time. We were visiting. I lived in Cincinnati. That's where I was born. But with my grandmother, we traveled south back home. Another experience, again, going south. Now I'm older. I'm 8 years old. And this time in Georgia with a great uncle. Same thing, 2 churches on the block. And I mean, these are Black communities, outhouses, no indoor plumbing, lots of fresh food, however, and experience with the earth, because everyone's farming, it's agricultural, and food is exchanged, and never saw that as a poverty experience because of the love in the home and learning to appreciate the earth. I, side by side with my grandmother, planting, harvesting, canning, swapping food with neighbors, etc. And then those churches once again. I was never baptized. I never, because the baptism was like this full dunk into a pool and I was afraid. And I wasn't forced. My grandmother didn't force it. Mm. But, and I, you know, and seeing people get baptized and rise up out of the water after the preacher dunked them, and again, as if they were on fire, you know. And so I witnessed a lot. Even the last time of that experience was 14, back in Georgia. And again, I could always feel this energy that made something well up in me, you know, a feeling that you just, it started down low and it would just rise up in you. Some people call it possession, I don't know.
Right. Well, you're just moving so beautifully into this, the next move in this practice process, that the connection begins to enter the sense domain, not yes. just the absorption and the emotional reactivity, but you're moving and your hands are going to that lower part of your body. So this next question, and that's where the movement comes from in our bodies, right? The legs and the lower torso. Curious, as this began to land more fully there in the vessel of you, and you began to move through your life, can you please tell us how that embodied experience began to grow in you and perhaps form a vision through your actions in your life? How, what did you do with that sense of connection?
Now, see, this is the interesting thing. This is a time when those of us whose roots are in the rural South, as many African Americans are, but I was not born there. I was born in Ohio. When I came to live with my parents, who had by that time moved to Washington, D.C., which is where I was raised, they were not churchgoers, church people, or anything. So I didn't go to church. And when I was at home, only when I was visiting my grandmother, who I had lived with as a young child. And I think it was just the memory of that, of the church experience, but not fully connected to the church, just the experience that I had had there. None of the dogma, yet it made me know, I felt like there was something more. And as a young person, adolescent going into my early teens, I yearned for that feeling that you're talking about, that feeling of something
right.
that I had experienced. And I think my earliest, maybe by the time I was 16, I started looking into astrology for some reason, wanting to understand. So I began to seek. So first there was astrology. Then in high school, a classmate turned me on to Buddhism, so, and chanting. So then there was that. And I have to back up, because through my early childhood experiences from the sanctified church, I went to Catholic school with all of its rituals and et cetera. So when I'm back home in Ohio, I'm in Catholic school with the nuns and habits. And then my father claimed to be Methodist. I never really quite understood what that meant. But and then my mom, for a hot minute, had an interest in becoming Episcopal. And one of my sisters is baptized Episcopal. So, you know, it wasn't so much seeking, I guess initially I was seeking religion, but I could never land in any of them comfortably.
Right. And
so I turned to astrology when I had could choose on my own.
So let's just zoom out for a moment, because that's what I'm sensing as I listen to you, Jhana, that since there wasn't an actual physical place that you could feel completely connected to, that there was, yet you had this beautiful quality of connection that you learned at some level of your being, really very young, it would be so natural, because we know this from the anthropologists and from the ancients, that the celestial movements are no different than the inner movements. So yeah. As we put our paddle in a little more deeply on this stream of your consciousness and embodied presence on the planet, tell us more how, and I'll just name how I'm seeing them. These were co-initiatory experiences. As you moved around through your family system in these places and spaces that you didn't choose yet, they were how you landed just as a person on the planet, right? Coming into this earth that you so beautifully connected to. So as this crystallizing toward these origins that many traditions actually invite us to learn more from, and I want the readers to know that this is really an ancient way to observe our own place on the planet, to be able to look at the stars and study astrology, astronomy. Tell us how, when your attention went seeking, even as a young person, where the astrology learnings and investigations and adventures, I'm assuming, moved you toward more embodied practice? How did it come to manifest in perhaps yoga or other movement-based practices or dancing?
I found astrology fascinating, and the place it often took me, and I'm not talking a commercialized astrological study of prediction, but wanting to understand the qualities or the energies that were described in some of the early books that I purchased. And they always led me to the East. You know, what I found was one, astrology led to a pursuit of understanding life from a more Eastern perspective. And what I mean by that is I was not forced to choose or become indoctrinated in any of the Abrahamic religions. And it wasn't for lack of trying, even on my own, because I wanted to settle into some spiritual practice.
Okay.
But I could never find that. But I found an opening by, and when I say Eastern philosophy, I still have one of the first books that astrology led me to. I don't remember quite the connection, but the first book I bought was by Jay Krishnamurti. It's called The First and Last Freedom. And, you know, now I'm in my late teens and trying to understand what is the nature of self and who am I? What am I? And that I would say, and also astrology became the foundation for a study of, or an understanding of Ayurveda, meaning an understanding of the energetic qualities that are part, that are our known universe, how that is me and how that is everything around me. The qualities and energies of masculine and feminine beyond an embodiment of gender in people, but as an energy, as qualities of energy of creation. And that, and all I can say is one thing unfolded into the other. Yoga came along quite accidentally. In our gym class at school, there was a posture I always loved doing. In school, they called it the bicycle, but what it essentially was shoulder stand, and then a move into the halasana or the plow pose. I just loved doing that on my own. I had no idea that was connected to anything called yoga, but it was something that I did on my own, and one day happened to be scrolling through TV stations, and there was Lilias Folin on TV back in the early 70s. And just in that moment, there she was coming up into shoulder stand. And it was like, oh, hey, there's that thing I like to do. And there was the click of yoga, and I began to watch her program for the physical practices. But I was already pretty well steeped and searching and devouring many books. There was another early writer who talked about yoga and your sexual energy, but it's really about Swadhisthana, the second chakra, Elizabeth Haish. And she also wrote a book on initiation. And so I'm reading, and then I see this television program of this physical practice of this thing called yoga. And that, and then meeting a friend who had, I'm now in college, and he was a Vietnam vet who had returned, used his GI Bill to, and was quite a philosopher. And one of the few people I could talk about without, you know, I didn't have very many friends I could discuss these things with without them thinking I was some kind of weirdo, which was the label that I lived with for quite a long time. Oh, you know, Jana, she's all into that weird stuff. And so I learned to hold that part of myself sacred for me and only reveal it to people I knew that I could have a conversation with. And through him, I met other people from different countries who were more open, and we would sit and have sanghas basically and discuss these things. So that was the beginning of it all. That's how it all began.
So thank you, Jana. I want to zoom in now on this crystallizing part in you that you called this place that was the container of your sacred, and that you knew somehow very deep in you that there was a cultivation that needed to happen that was private to you, personal to you. But then I'm hearing you begin to network out, right? To have those conversations in those other places. So please tell us that quality of having been immersed in your long cultivation and rooting process in your own personal development, and when it became permeable, more flexible, when the exchange with others began to be important to you. Tell us that story.
Yeah, that took a long time, Allie. I mean, coming into this understanding, practice, in the early 70s, you know, as I said, there weren't very many people to talk to. So when I say, you know, I'm talking about maybe, I can count them on my hand, on both hands. I mean, it's a very tiny circle. And I was open. It opened me to want to experience different people. So, you know, the Hare Krishnas were there, and the Sikhs were, had opened a restaurant in DC. And I was just very curious about, what does this mean? How you're dressed, who you are. And the very first, copy of the only copy of the Bhagavad Gita that I have was given to me by someone who was a Sikh whose restaurant I went to. And so I was just curious about people who understand how we live in different ways. I felt what I was getting from what I was reading, not so much, not to be so dogmatic and if it works for you, that's fine, and to choose what serves your life. But that does not mean that that people who do not ascribe to that are wrong. And it's interesting to hear how they perceive and see the world. So I didn't come out of the shell until the late 90s. So it was a good 30 years, again, because of largely, I learned when I don't go along to get along. That's not been my path, to go along to get along. So I've always sort of walked my own path in many ways, maybe alongside and in step with the crowd sometimes, but I'm not in the crowd. I'm outside from the crowd, just in case I want to go off in a different direction.
But what I'm tracking as I listen to this crystallizing of some core sense of will and this real deep relationship of connective tissue, really, to source, right? If we want to generalize it, this cultivation, this seeing and sensing, this a little bit of experimentation to the Hare Krishnas, the Sikhs. By the late 90s, now we're just a decade ago.
Mm-hmm.
And we are of the same age, if I recall. So that means you were in your late 50s, in the late 90s. And so what's interesting now, as we shift a little bit into...
I was in my late 40s in the late
40s.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay, thank you. So I have 10 years on you. Oh my goodness, darling. And so then, thank you. So then as we look from that place of a launch pad, this seeing and sensing that you are part of something, tell us... as that, we call it in the presencing work, some action confidence, this seeing and sensing and grounding and rooting and stretching and exploring, doing your halasanas and whatever else evolved, this remembering of all the parts from the astrology, etc., as the container of Janna and what she carries through her began to get more solid, let's call it, more in a place that might be offered out. Tell us from this heart and mind, right? From the yogic tradition, we'd name it as the citta or the Buddhist. Tell us what began to happen in your moves in the world. Just be very simple so that this movement out into the we space, it's really clear for people, this subtle body that gets active now.
I think what immediately came to mind as you were describing that is I learned to own and appreciate the fact that I don't see the world like other people see it. and that's okay. And I have to also give credit to my mother, who allowed me to grow and I think to some extent raised me as well as raised me in an to be unconventional, to appreciate being different, and to be strong if in my conviction of that, so that again, the teasing, sometimes the being ostracized, to be okay with that, because just and okay with it because people, I'm me, and people aren't gonna always see things the way I see them, and to appreciate how I see them, because I do think often when in my different experiences at work, in school, I always had a different point of view. And I think that served me well. It allowed me to be more, not more creative, but to allow my creativity to show through in its unique way. And I wish, you know, sometimes I wish people would understand that part of themselves that is just so uniquely you, not to cover it up and again, just to get along.
So as that continued to land, that gift of your focused awareness, some people might call it, some generative gift that continued to flow through you and all those early experiences, the integrative function, some might call it. If there were practices that informed you and continued to build that awareness that it was this unique DNA pattern that wanted to get revealed and that it was almost asking you to support it, right? That more transpersonal relationship that we move into when we engage deeply in becoming. Tell us if there were practices that were your go-to practices, you know, like your signature ways, or perhaps this might be a time to move toward the practice of peace and how those essential parts of your practice turned into something that the collective is now enjoying.
You know, there, I would say the first thing that I think helped to cultivate that, there was a time, again, in my quest for religion where I practiced Islam for a while, which is a very disciplined religion. You know, you're making prayer 5 times a day. What you've got to stop what you're doing to do that and make that a habit. The fasting month is an incredible honer of discipline, and getting into your, I would say, fasting for Ramadan helped me to really see with that chitta within myself and how that works and how those different arousals of your nature, can you practice brahmacharya, for example? Can you restrain yourself from the most basic of your instincts? And to do that year after year until I found that there were just other aspects of Islam that didn't work for me, but there were certain rituals of it. So I may have lost track of your question, but you know, those were some of the early practices that came into my life that helped to establish, help me to understand how to establish a practice.
Right. Okay.
consistent practice.
So if we're now imagining this eye of the needle or an alchemical process, that these elements that you've beautifully woven a narrative around, those experiences of your life, and we match it up with your particular DNA, matching up with the time that you were born, et cetera, just like every other human being, this funneling of your attention, right? Because this is the basic quality of the neuroception that's moving into our field now, that as our perception, as the particular experiences land in us, chitta, that the life force, the prana, begins to go through, and then we follow that. So once you've landed, I'm hearing you actually now being called out to do something for others. That moment of that me to we landing in something that might change how you do your practice. And this is this social piece, the social field, the collective benefit, the willingness to be in seva in the life that you've been given now. So what is it that evolved to become the practice of peace? Tell us a little bit about that in these last 15 minutes or so. So that relationship.
I don't know if it's not that linear for me. You know, it's just, I try to be open, and sometimes either it's an arousal, it could be a momentary thought, it could be in a dream. I don't know where it comes from. It just comes. And I am the kind of person, I don't try to think things through to the finish. If something arises within me that requires me to take action, I take action, and to see where it will go, if it's what I should do, because time will tell, or the evolution of it, or the evolving of it will tell. And as a result, I've had many different experiences. But it's never, it's just like that feeling in that church as a little girl. It's something that just wells up in you, and you just go for it, and, you know, see where it goes, see where that road, and you can't be afraid to go down that road.
Yes, okay.
Don't overthink going down that road. Just go down, take a step. Start walking down the road, and either you'll get to a new destination where you have to turn, or turn around and come back, or go in a new direction. Just go. Just as Nike says, just do it. Just do it. and trust what arises within you. Where else is it going to come from? I don't do things that other people think are good for me to do unless I feel, I have to feel right. It has to germinate within me. Not because somebody said it's good for you or you should do this. I don't, whenever I've done that, it hasn't worked out very well. So I've learned to trust my own vision. My own vision for my life, and to move with it and not be afraid. Just go.
Perfect. So this just going and this following, this, it feels very fluid and flow-like when you speak about it, the language. And where my interest and the reader's interest is yes, of course, that process of being with it as it's opening. And so maybe we do a little peek around the corner together now, Jhana, and we're 5 years out, I don't know, 10 years out. And, you know, the purpose of these stories are to help the ones who are coming next. And so this vision from the future, not the vision of the future, is this other way of bringing that reflective capacity back into the system, right? So many ancient practices are that. And I'm wondering if you feel comfortable going there to lift up and out 5-10 years out, and let us know what you find as you look back on this life that you've been given. And if there's anything that arises that you see, feel, or sense from there, let's take a moment. Mm-hmm. Kernels on the path.
Well, none of this occurs again without sadhana, practice, intention. There are three words, the sankalpa, the intention, then the practice, and then that unity of those two things coming together. And as someone who's practiced yoga for a long time, and yoga as a practice of for my personal development, a practice of being able to be with myself and to watch how I, to be able to just observe without thinking. And that's something I recommend, highly recommend, just watch. I've always been, I think this discipline has helped me to simply watch. And sometimes when you feel you're on the outside looking in, that's what you do. You observe from the outside. And I very much have felt as if I'm always observing the others or the rest from an outside position. And to just watch it, to simply watch it. And then from the observation, that's what causes whatever comes up in me. I think that's it, just to watch it. And it very much relates back to working on the land with my grandmother as a kid, learning how to do that. Because when you are out in the, or with the earth, when you are with the earth, you are observing what is around you. There's nothing to judge there. You know, when you go out into the garden, there's no judgment. You're observing, you're looking at it, you're watching it. You come to understand it, you are nurturing it. So those same principles are applied to everything else. Just observe it, be with it, be in it.
So this being in it and this spaciousness that you referred to, without attaching to any kind of ideas about it.
Exactly.
And I did notice that you looked over your left shoulder, and I remember that, aren't you a gardener? Aren't
yeah,
you?
Yeah, I was looking, it's a rose right there on my rose bushes. And as I said that, one of the roses peeked up and was like, because the wind is blowing, it's like, yeah, that's right, right on. Because I do believe I learned the secret life of the secret language of plants from my grandmother. And she often, one of the things she told me was that the plants knew me as well as I thought. They probably knew me better than I knew them, and that I had to learn how to understand them. And I spend a lot of time communicating with them, and it's not in words, and you know, it's not that kind of communication. And just to, and it's just remarkable how they respond. So
let's just wrap this part. as you bring in the earth and then the living friends that we have on the earth, and you mentioned Bunner, the secret life of plants, and these wonderful other wisdom traditions.
When I say the secret life of plants, actually I'm thinking about Stevie Wonder. who did an apple.
Well, here we go, girl. This, and you know that the anthroposophists are totally into this. Yeah. So as we sit here now, I'm just experiencing the worlds colliding, the many ways of knowing, right? And that this connection, that this whole conversation has been like a weaving of many ways of connecting from your personal experience of practice and then just all of your lived experiences. And so if you were to wrap up just with a few further comments as you take a moment to land again in this quality of this time, this new time that we're being invited into, or maybe it's not, right? How can you help people learn from the way you've experienced these many differences in your life?
Two more things that have been primary: art and music. Or should I say music and art? I was raised around, from my adolescence and till today, in my home growing up, I was around many different artists as well. And that also contributed to not limiting how I see things, because artists see things in very unique ways. And so I was very much informed by that. And right now, as we are sheltered and at home and have time to be with ourselves and contemplate moving forward, I really see the potential for so much more art. And when I say art, I'm not just talking about painting and drawing. I'm not talking in the traditional or conventional sense of art. I'm talking about that unique expression of who you are as an individual that you can manifest into something. And I believe that that's what we are here for. We're here to create. We're here to create. It, my understanding of biblical text where it says, well, you know, we say man, but let's say humankind was created in the image of God. What I think, what that means to me is that of all of the living life forms, all of the life forms of the planet, on the planet, we are the ones who can take a thought and manifest it into something concrete. This cup I'm holding, somebody had to think, oh, a vessel that I can drink from with a handle and this or that. It's a thought. And then I don't know what other life form does that. And we are co-creators with the divine. And how we use that, excuse me.
Stay with it.
Dust.
Oh, that old dust.
But that's our opportunity to look at what we create and to create with intention and consciousness, not unconscious. And until we do that, that moving from me to we, that's going to be a big part of it. How we create and what we create. And it's incumbent upon each of us to look within ourselves. What am I consciously creating? Because I'm bringing that forth into the world.
I am going to let us close now. And I invite you, Jana, just to take a moment of breath. I might have gone off screen. Are you still there?
Mm-hmm, I'm here.
Okay. And just take a moment as we open space together for this co-creative time. And I am in deep gratitude, bowing to you. Thank you so much.
Myself. Thank you, Allie. Thank you for inviting me to share. I appreciate it. Thank you.
May it be useful for the future of our shared love of the divine. Bless your heart.
Peace be with you, my dear.
Peace be with you. You'll just end the meeting. I keep this open, okay?
Sorry about the cough attack. I don't know what went